The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
So we, in some ways, knew it was coming. We didn't understand the depth of the dishonesty that would come with it. So from story after story in the media, left-wing media, we saw anonymous source after anonymous source based on second or third-hand accounts. And time again, stories would come out and people would reach out to me and say, you know, I've spoken to this reporter about who you really are and I was willing to go on the record. But they didn't print my quote. They didn't print any of my quotes. Or I've worked with you for 10 years, or I was your accountant, or I was your chief operating officer, or I was your board member, or I was with you on 100 different tour stops for Concerned Veterans for America. No one called me. No one asked about your conduct on the record or off the record. Instead, a small handful of anonymous sources were allowed to drive a smear campaign, an agenda about me, because our left-wing media in America today, sadly, doesn't care about the truth. All they were out to do, Mr. Chairman, was to destroy me. And why do they want to destroy me? Because I'm a change agent and a threat to them, because Donald Trump was willing to choose me, to empower me, to bring the Defense Department back to what it really should be, which is warfighting.
That's Pete Hegseth from earlier this morning. The hearings are off and running, and there he is defending himself and the smear campaign, the depth, as he said, of dishonesty brought on by just a small number of people and so many anonymous sources. This is very swampy. We're quite used to this kind of behavior within the media, the regime media. And of course, the radical leftist Democrat Party as well. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at trumpetdaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to rumble.com/trumpetdaily. And if you go there, make sure you leave us the thumbs up and a nice comment down below. Speaking of nice comments, we are continuing to receive them following the Celtic Throne performance on Sunday afternoon. In fact, both of my children appeared on the local CBS affiliate here in Oklahoma City, or just south of us in Oklahoma City. And we have a clip of that we'll play later on in the show. And they did a really nice job, Channel 9, of just promoting the performance and encouraging those in the local community to go to CelticThrone.com in order to secure tickets for the final performance, at least for now. Of course, it'll be back, no doubt, this spring, this summer sometime. But this is the follow-on to the world premiere that we had just a couple days ago. So we've got that. We've got lots of feedback on Celtic Throne that we'll get around to at the end of today's show. But first, a lot to get to in the news. I mean, we've talked since the beginning of 2023 about Jeroboam's war, the war to recover. And it does seem like, judging by the way they geared up for Hegseth, it does seem like the Democrats are regrouping to some extent. We've talked, of course, about Obama, the dear leader, being silenced. But there's a lot of demonic activity, and you can see them lining up to resist, to fight. Jack Smith comes out with his investigation in the middle of the night. Just 1 a.m. this morning. We'll take you to some of the highlights of that in just a moment. But first, from the Daily Signal, a surprising number of federal government employees admit they are gearing up to act like a deep state opposing the incoming second administration of Donald Trump. It used to be when you said deep state, the regime media would say, oh, come on, you're a conspiracy theorist. Now, that's about what they're admitting they are. We are part of the resistance. Well, a lot of them are being exposed as well. A lot of them are packing their bags because they, and you see this in the interviews with Melania and with some of the others in the Trump administration or the incoming administration. They know, the Trump family knows how Washington works this time around. And they're what the deep state is terrified of is people that are actually loyal to Donald Trump, put in positions over the Pentagon in the case of Pete Hegseth and the attack on him. I mean, to listen to these people, how rich of these Democrat senators. I heard one just before I got in the car to come over to the studio, and he was grilling Hegseth over his marriage vows. Suddenly, if you're not faithful to your wife, you can't preside over a government agency. Well, I think that pretty much rules out all of Washington. This is one of the most immoral regions in the world. And you've got Democrats suddenly who are pro-faithfulness in marriage. I mean, they're even, it sounds like they're even against divorce. We're living in an age, of course God is, we know this, but we're living in an age where most Americans now see divorce as morally acceptable. They don't just accept it, they see it as the right thing to do. And yet here are these Democrats, these hypocrites. Listen, if you want to talk about God's standard, I'll be happy to do it. We do it often on this show. But for these people, promoting all the filth that they promote, and now all of a sudden, one man who happens to be loyal to Trump, if he's made some mistakes in his personal life, he's out. He's ruled out. It's just almost unbelievable to even watch. I'm sure there's a few faithful people in D.C. I mean faithful to their spouse, faithful to their families, but it's a rarity these days. Satan has just, he has broken the family. And there's no excuse for broken families all across the board, on the Democrat or the Republican side. But to hear the promoters of the breakdown, now suddenly they're very religious. Now they're very righteous. Now, I mean, they are preaching. They want to destroy Hegseth, and they've cleared away the others with the help of the deep state, the help of the FBI background checks and all those things. There was supposed to be a couple of other confirmation hearings going on this week or today as well. But no, Schumer and company, they delayed the other ones, and they're focusing their attack on Pete Hegseth. They know that if they're focusing on, they're attacking the resolve of the Republican Party. If they can destroy Hegseth, then they know they can destroy some of the others that Donald Trump has picked. It'll be interesting to see how that this war plays out, to see if the Republicans might finally show a backbone, is to see if the Republicans might finally have some fight in them. Because they're going to have to fight. The war continues. And judging by 2 Kings 14, God is going to, he is going to empower the Jeroboam administration. One of our news gatherers just broke down a verse we referred to so often, 2 Kings 14 and verse 28. I'll read it to you. It says, "Now the rest of the acts of Jeroboam and all that he did and his might, how he warred and how he recovered Damascus and Hamath, which belonged to Judah for Israel." Quite a recovery project here. Those words, might and warred and recovered. Might means strength, power, bravery, military, virtue, victory. I mean, you look at what the dear leader's done to the military. You've got homegrown terrorists that are emerging out of the woke military now. Is Jeroboam going to recover some strength there in the military? that word ward, to fight, to battle, to make war. It says word is connected to the metaphor of a fierce warrior devouring their enemies. Again, it certainly looks like God's going to give Jeroboam some favor. We don't know the extent of the recovery, of the resurgence, but it's upon us. He's going to be inaugurated next week, and he'd like to have as many of his appointments in place, confirmed. That final word, recovered, to return or to come back, to be, to repent and turn back to God. And it says further on, it can mean to be returned, restored, or brought back. The focus on repentance, probably not going to play out, but certainly a restoration of sorts, something brought back. I mean, Jeroboam, he's just been president-elect, and I mean, he's not just recovered his presidency, but he's looking beyond the presidency, looking beyond even the past 8, 10, 12 years, even talking of recovering Panama Canal. Pretty amazing. This Daily Signal piece says most Americans, even many of the elites who voted for Vice President Kamala Harris, are willing to support Trump's administration, according to a research survey commissioned by Napolitan Institute. It says, yet 42% of the federal government managers who work in D.C., the swamp, intend to work against the administration. That's from the Daily Signal. Here again, it just takes a small number who are willing to, go the depth of dishonesty. It was even surprising to us. Hegseth has a few skeletons in his closet, but he still was shocked, alarmed by just the depth of the dishonesty. Listen to these next few clips that we've put together just to kind of summarize some of the events of the past 24 hours or so, starting with clip two.
It seems like delay is the word of the day. Tomorrow was supposed to feature President Trump's pick for Veterans Affairs Secretary Doug Collins, but he's just been delayed until next week. The committee blaming the FBI for failing to complete the background check on time.
Yeah, and it doesn't stop there. Interior Secretary, think about the wildfires in California, that nominee, Doug Burgum, also delayed by 2 days, and the Energy and Natural Resources Chairman blaming the slow-moving swamp, saying, quote, despite its compliance and the committee's notice, OGE hasn't completed its review. This bureaucratic delay is unacceptable.
Last but not least, Director of National Intelligence picked Tulsi Gabbard, being repeatedly stonewalled. Democrats now insisting that all the paperwork hasn't been filled out. Dems are turning this into a full-blown showdown, throwing punches that block the agenda that Americans voted for.
Democrats aren't looking to work with Republicans. They want a war. Schumer said, quote, Republicans spent 4 years attacking the Democratic brand, and we need to use the hearings to begin returning the favor. The resistance failed, but they're not done fighting.
Donald Trump and Senate Republicans
do things to hurt you.
We will fight.
This is a new Congress.
It is a new day.
We are united.
Determined. Ready.
The 119th Congress has begun.
Whoa. The Democrats and all these bureaucrats behind the scenes, they're operating really secretively. But the Trump team's rooting them out. Incoming senior Trump administration officials have begun questioning career civil servants who work on the White House National Security Council about who they voted for, their political contributions, and whether they've made any social media posts that be considered incriminating. At least some of these non-political employees have begun packing up their bags.
Yeah, I think the Democrats' whole strategy here is going to backfire. I think the American people have said they're tired of obstructionism. They say that they want the government to work together for the American people. If you look at how people view the brand of the Democratic Party, they basically are saying they're out for themselves, they're out for the elite, they're not out to work for the American people, and this is just further evidence of that. California is literally on fire. The whole country is has issues that are in front of us. We've got national security issues, all kinds of things where the American people want action right away. And they have a right to have a cabinet that goes into place right away. These kind of stall tactics are going to do nothing but backfire. Mm-hmm. And look at this Democratic leadership that's limping out of office.
But you'd never know it if you listen to them. Joe Biden gave a whopper of a speech yesterday talking about how great the last 4 years have been. Yeah, he's just a seamless transition over to Donald Trump. America evidently is stronger and more prosperous and more peaceful than ever before. It's laughable. It's laughable. There's one, as one of Trump, I think it was J.D. Vance, he said about Donald Trump, he's inheriting dumpster fires and he's going to have to put them out. It's all though looking at the resistance, it's all so carefully coordinated. It always is. And the last one there, she mentions the California fires. We're going to have more on this as the week unfolds. Schellenberger sat down with Tucker. He's from California. Michael, I believe his name is, Michael Schellenberger. And he was just describing on the 1st of January, there's this forecast for the Santa Ana winds. And then after that, I mean, someone on TV, the weather people started saying it was coming. And they were high danger zones for Southern California. And then I think it was like January 4th or 5th. That's when Karen Bass, the mayor of Los Angeles, took off to Ghana. She flew to Ghana. I think it's her fifth or sixth trip as mayor. And she said she wouldn't travel abroad as mayor. It's like I covered on yesterday's show. I mean, these communist left-wing regimes have been exposed. They're responsible for the fires, literally, in that case. And yet, look at them regroup. Get Trump. They campaigned on Get Trump for months, and it didn't work. And now they return to what they're good at, warring against Trump. Sundance says there were three Senate committee confirmation hearings scheduled for today. Two of them have been canceled due to the FBI not providing the committees with background reports. Considering the way D.C. operates and considering the Senate operators wanted to totally focus on Pete Hegseth as their first scalp, the clearing of the decks to focus exclusively on Hegseth is not coincidental. The political war now begins. Hopefully there's some Republicans in those committees prepared for war. The war to recover. They've got to be willing to fight. We'll see. We'll see how this plays out. You can be sure Donald Trump is going to be fighting through Truth Social and other means. This is another one from Sundance. It says, nothing in D.C. is a coincidence when it happens at this level. And it talks about the FBI dragging its feet. Imagine that, the FBI working against Donald Trump. Yeah, the same FBI that came in there after New Orleans within hours. It's not terrorism, no. I mean, this has been 4 years of utopia. 4 years of fabulous blessings. That's what Joe Biden said, essentially, just yesterday. It's unbelievable. Over at Politico, it says Senate Democrats are readying their attacks against Pete Hegseth as he makes his case Tuesday on Capitol Hill as to why someone dogged by controversy and with no Pentagon experience should lead one of the world's largest employers. So the regime media, the Democrat, they're all banding together. It just takes a small number because the depth of dishonesty that they're willing to go to, there's no end. By the way, the confirmation hearings or the one going on for Hegseth, I think it was interrupted like three or four times this morning. Lots of insurrection-y behavior going on at the Capitol today. I mean, they're disrupting an official proceeding. Aren't you supposed to go to the D.C. gulag for 3 years for doing that? We'll see. We'll see how it plays out this time. The disrupting an official proceeding inside the sacred walls of the Capitol. Now you see the protesters. They've got to be given a voice. It's Pete Hegseth. He's been married 3 times. He obviously can't head up the Pentagon. What if everyone in D.C. was held to God's standard? There'd be no one qualified. I've made this point before. But what do I mean? Jesus said, look, your righteousness needs to exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees. That's what he said in the Sermon on the Mount. You know, as we've studied through that sermon, by the way, in our life and teachings class, it's amazing. I went through that article with you yesterday about the antisocial century. And Jesus, in that brilliant sermon, and that's understating it, it's the best sermon in history. He's basically telling you how to work with people, how to get along with fellow man. If they ask you to go a mile for them, go 2 miles. You don't see the spirit of that. You don't see going, bending over backwards to settle a dispute, to solve conflict, to love even your enemy. You don't see that spirit. Certainly not in D.C. today. It's a wonderful study. I highly recommend it. The golden rule. That comes out of Matthew 7. How about that? Treating people like you would want to be treated yourself. And then, I mean, there's a section in there about oaths. You don't need this oath. It's let your yes be yes and let your no be no. Just tell the truth. Come out of the shadows. You don't need to give your testimony anonymously. Just speak the truth. That's the new world that's coming. Mr. Armstrong has that great couple of paragraphs in Mystery of the Ages, and I think in some of his other writings, about what a wonderful world this would be if we were just keeping the Ten Commandments. Think about the incredible positive changes there would be if people just started keeping one of the commandments. If, for instance, you knew you weren't going to bear false witness, if you knew other people weren't going to do that, that would revolutionize our nation. That would revolutionize the world. So much lying, so much deception, so much backstabbing. I mean, you had one of the funny men, or I should say not so funny men, last night come out in tears practically because of the fires. I mean, here he's living in Southern California, this jokester, and he's brought to tears. And then he goes on and talks about Trump's words, how he hates Trump's and all the scumbags, as he said, that work for Trump. Trump didn't have anything to do with the wildfires. He's called out Gavin Newsom, but that's it. But here comes the left-wing funny people, and they're not even funny. They're crying, and then the next moment they're angry because, well, Orange Hitler, he sent out a tweet. This world is about to be revolutionized. Acts chapter 3 says it. The restitution of all things. When God's government is in place, I mean, what we're seeing on a daily basis is a complete and total breakdown of government. Righteous government. There is no righteous government. It's just fighting. It's warring. Now, there's a lot to be said for fighting for a righteous cause. You have to. But here come the Democrats picking a fight because they know if they get one Republican on that committee to break down, to give in, to surrender, it's over. It's over for Pete Hegseth. That's how it works. And so they've regrouped. They've cleared away the schedules. Everyone's focused on Hegseth. You know how it works. Now let's go after our first scalp. The very first one. This will set the tone for all of them. This is what goes through their minds. Hegseth will need the backing of all Republicans, it says. Senators will likely delve into his position on women in combat and probe his previous leadership of veterans organizations. Democrats alone can't sink his nomination. But Senator Joni Ernst, a Republican from Iowa, a combat veteran and survivor of sexual assault, could do so if she wants. Yeah, I mean, it's worse than the marriages. Evidently, it's allegations of sexual assault. I mean, the one senator was saying, you know, is beating a woman, is that disqualifying? I guess the implication is that he beats women as well. Here they come. Self-righteous Pharisees. Sinners, all of them. We all are. Not an ounce of humility. I mean, I can't. The incompetence of these leaders in California is one thing. But as I was telling my team this morning, the arrogance that's on display. Yeah, I know I was in Ghana, but listen, we did everything right. I mean, it's a fire. What are you going to do? That reservoir in the Palisades was empty for not just the last week when the fires were raging. It's been empty for a year. Who does this? Who does this to their people, to their neighbors? I'm assuming some of the people in the mayor's office probably lived in or around the Palisades. Just an ounce of unselfish, outflowing concern for the good and welfare of other people. Just an ounce of it, you would think, would modify their behavior or maybe bring them back from Ghana with, you know, a little bit of humility and repentance. I'm sorry for what we did. I'm sorry that it wasn't full. I'm sorry that the fire department wasn't on the scene before the fires started. I'm sorry about all of the meth heads, the homeless people that seem to get a kick out of starting fires. We'll find out the cause of these fires, I would assume, soon enough. But there's homeless people, 40, 50, 60,000 of them living in Southern California alone. There are curses to go around. There are dumpster fires everywhere. And selfish, self-serving, arrogant government is being exposed at every level. And the fake president can come out and say how great it's been for 4 years. People know better. In Southern Cal, even. Forget about the funny man. There's hardcore Democrats that are waking up to what's going on. Schellenberger, when he sat down with Tucker, he said he was astounded a couple years ago when he watched this focus group of minorities who, you know, they were talking about the mayoral race. You had Caruso on the one hand, who's a real estate tycoon like Donald Trump and a real go-getter, a man of action. And then you've got the DEI candidate, Karen Bass, on the other side. And here, minority groups, to their credit, they were asking, you know, questions on issues that affected them. Well, what's his position on this, or what's her position on that? Then you get to the white liberals, and they find out that you can check all the right boxes with the DEI. Well, of course I'm voting for Bass then. What is wrong with people's thinking? What is wrong? Like Tucker asked, what is wrong with the whites, not just in America, but in Canada and Britain and Australia? Why is there so much self-hatred among Israelite people? That's who we are, the lost tribes of Israel. And a lot of the correction and criticism that God levels at Israelites anciently, you see the same weaknesses today. And they just happen to be destroying our nations We're destroying ourselves. How do you explain this? Die by suicide. So here are the Republicans. They're being tested. Do they have the resolve? Do they have the strength? I mean, look, he's beating people. He's beating women, okay? He's unfaithful. He's drinking all the time on the job. He's drinking alcohol. So, yeah, he's a horrible person, right? Well, unless you hear the ones that the media silence, they don't want to talk to the ones that can vouch for him and his record, even when he was at Fox News. Now, those voices, they're blotted out. You see how it works? Just get the anonymous allegations out there, and you get your scalp. It's a sick system. And it's not like we haven't seen this before. At Substack, it says, do Republicans know what time it is? This week, with the kickoff of confirmation hearings for President-elect Donald Trump's nominees, the new Senate majority will have an opportunity to answer that question. Do they know what time it is? Do they know what they're in for? Do they know that the war in 24 continues? Now it's the war in 25. Now, we have some insights here on this program because of prophecy. As I say, God's going to empower the Jeroboam administration. And you can see that from 2 Kings 14. You can see it from Amos 7. The GOP can demonstrate it understands the stakes of the confirmation fights by decisively winning them, neutralizing Democrat attacks, going on offense against them, and standing unified behind Trump's nominees. It says winning the confirmation fights is of transcendent importance. It says because personnel is policy. Personnel is policy. I mean, who you have over the Pentagon or over the FBI or over the DOJ, they establish the policy. And if they're an extension of Donald John Trump, well, there's going to be some Trumpism running the show. And again, based on Bible prophecy, it seems like he's going to have a fair bit of success to that end. Think about how much time and effort Barack Obama put into radicalizing, to just take one example, the military. The military went woke during the Obama years. This is from Real Clear Politics. It says, William Thibault, the director of American Military Project, Claremont Center, well, it says it speaks with Tom Klingenstein about how woke racial quotas and gender ideology are harming military readiness and unit cohesion. He also offers some pieces of advice for Donald Trump, including to stop categorizing members of the military by race. So I'm not going to go through all the detail. I'm fast running out of time. But there's another one here from Politico about how, there's discussion within the Washington circles about disobeying the orders of Donald Trump. He's talked about, deporting the illegals and even using the military if he has to. I mean, we saw in the last term that Trump was in there, Milley and company, they just defied Donald Trump. Politico says the last time an American president deployed the U.S. military domestically under the Insurrection Act during the deadly Los Angeles riots in 92, it says Douglas Ollivant was there. Ollivant, then a young Army first lieutenant, says things went fairly smoothly because it was somebody else, the cops, doing the head cracking to restore order, not the 7th Infantry Division. Further on, it says, by the end of the 6 days of rioting, 63 people were dead and 2,300 injured. But some, listen to this, some in the U.S. military fear next time could be different. According to nearly a dozen retired officers and current military lawyers, as well as scholars who teach at West Point and Annapolis, an intense, if quiet, debate is underway inside the U.S. military community about what orders it would be obliged to obey if President Donald Trump decides to follow through on his previous warnings that he might deploy troops? What orders should we obey? Coming from the commander-in-chief, there are curses to go around. That's why I urged you last week to get the United States and Britain in prophecy. I mean, look at all of the dumpster fires. Look at all of the problems that need to be fixed. There's no way they're all going to be fixed. Some of them, no doubt. Maybe quite a few of them. We'll see. But how do you, when you talk about root causes to all of this, I mean, now it's fine to talk about insurrection. Now, today, it's fine to disrupt official congressional hearings. That's okay. This government, it's been so thoroughly radicalized, weaponized, particularly by the dear leader. The new administration, it's got its work cut out for it, that's for sure. It says here, Trump has reportedly said he might use the military to suppress a domestic protest or to raid a sanctuary city to purge it of undocumented immigrants or possibly defend the southern border. Some in the military community say they are especially disturbed by the prospect that troops might be used to serve Trump's political ends. It's okay for radical Democrats to consider these options, but not Trump. I mean, he's Orange Hitler. You can hear them now. If the troops were ever called in under Trump's presidency, stormtroopers! This is Hitler's Nazi machine, right? Some involved in the current debate say they are worried Trump would not be as restrained this time. He's filling his Pentagon and national security team with fierce loyalists. Imagine that. He's actually appointing people or selecting people who are loyal, who want to be an extension of his agenda. You can see why the heads are exploding in the deep state. The concern is not just on how much force might be used, but also whether troops would be regularly deployed in advance of the new administration's political interests. It says the topic is extremely sensitive inside the active duty military, and a Pentagon spokesperson declined to comment. Well, going back to that article again, do Republicans, do they know what they're in for? Do they know what kind of resistance they're going to be up against? Certainly there's more this time around than last time that know what they're going up against. Donald Trump certainly does. This report released in the wee hours of the night, early this morning. Jack Smith, Richard Palmer touched on this at the morning brief. Jack Smith's report, which seems to be written for his Democrat supporters to explain why he failed to get Trump. He basically just submitted this report. They made it public last night or early this morning. And it's Jack Smith basically saying, I did such a good job. And if he didn't get voted in on November 5, he would be going to, I think a D.C. jury would convict him. Oh, really? Newsflash, of course they would. I did such a great job. Listen to this from Fox Business, clip one.
Jack Smith claims that Trump would have been convicted in the election interference case if he did not win the presidency, Congressman. Trump responded on Truth Social. He says this, to show you how desperate, deranged Jack Smith is, he released his fake findings at 1 a.m. Did he say that the Unselect Committee illegally destroyed and deleted all of the evidence?
Yeah, Jack Smith, it was a 132-page love letter to himself telling everybody across the country that, you know, he himself and the wonderful prosecutors that work for him just did a fantastic job. And if Donald J. Trump wasn't reelected as president, he would have convicted him. I mean, this is kind of where every prosecutor starts from. But Jack Smith is just delusional on this front. And it doesn't surprise me that they released this in the final moments of the Biden administration.
the final moments of his position in the DOJ. He's gone. He's running for cover. And on the way out, just like Joe Biden, the fake president, did yesterday, on the way out, he congratulates himself on doing a fantastic job, a splendid job. The lawfare was perfect. Not an ounce of humility, not even an ounce of respect for the American electorate. The arrogance, as I say, on display. Here's more from Fox News, clip 7.
He then goes on and says that he had to do this criminally because the political act of impeachment wasn't enough. But the thing that got my attention was number 3, when he talks about when the president said peacefully and patriotically protest. But he says the president said fight, fight, fight 10 times after that. He hinged it on fight, fight, fight. My mind goes to the most iconic moment of the president, which is when he was attempted to be assassinated and he said, fight, fight, fight. So how does he use that as justification?
Well, there is obviously no smoking gun evidence here. I think that it is just pure lawfare and serves absolutely no purpose but to undermine Americans' confidence in the justice system one last time here.
He said fight in a speech. So obviously he's leading an insurrection. The reason at the heart of their get Trump delusion is the fact that Trump, he does fight, he does war. And they're used to Republicans who surrender. They're used to Republicans who love to win favor from the regime media, from the mainstream media. They love to be praised by Rachel Maddow and Joe Scarborough. Trump, for his part, he doesn't care. And he fights back. Where would he be if he didn't fight? That, like, was noted there. I mean, that's the most iconic image from 2024. Trump with his fist in the air, telling his supporters, we've got to fight for this. We've got a war for this. We've got to recover what's ours. And that's going to take some people of courage, some people who are willing to fight. Otherwise, there's a powerful and profound spiritual lesson in all of this as well. If we don't fight against our adversary, he will devour us. He will destroy us. He's coming for our scalp. He wants to pick us off. He wants for you and me. He wants us to be a casualty in this spiritual war that we're in. Again, go back and study those words in 2 Kings 14 and verse 28. There was another report released over the past 24 hours as well. This is a special counsel, David Weiss, his report on all of the Hunter crimes. That's not getting quite as much coverage from the regime, certainly not from the regime media. Here's clip 8.
Katie also released was the DOJ David Weiss special counsel report on the investigation into Hunter Biden, confirming that Hunter did make millions using the family name. He writes, quote, as a well-educated lawyer and businessman, Mr. Biden consciously and willfully chose not to pay at least $1.4 million in taxes over a 4-year period. Mr. Biden made this money by using his last name and connections to the secure, lucrative business opportunities. What are your thoughts when you read through this?
Well, this report was a very strong rebuke that there was any sort of selective prosecution of Hunter Biden. There was overwhelming evidence of criminality against him. I think, again, that this has been established through his court proceedings. And, of course, the blanket pardon that he received, very unprecedented, which Mr. Weiss also feels was highly unusual and maybe even unfair given the gravity of his criminality here.
Criminal. I mean, in this case, you see the criminal behavior, what he got away with, raking in millions on the Biden family name. Worse than that, selling favors, government favors. And then he's making millions and millions and millions of dollars, and he's not paying his taxes. I mean, in this case, you can actually point to crimes. As it is, the one report Like Richard Palmer says in his morning brief, the tale of two reports. One comes out and it's stick it to Trump on what? Well, we don't really know, but, you know, we were justified. And I think a D.C. court would have put him behind bars. And then you've got the other report, the Weiss report. The pay-to-play schemes? Not paying the taxes? Taking advantage of his father's position? And the big guy being involved? I mean, this is a scandal of epic proportions. The tale of two reports. Mr. Palmer got that right. That's in today's morning brief. If you don't subscribe to our email blast, they come out twice a day, I believe, and we give you also an email update about this show to tell you what the title is and how you can watch the podcast after the fact if you don't watch it live. You can see there, subscribe at thetrumpet.com. When we come back, we've got more to get to about Celtic Throne in particular. We'll show you the local report from right here in Oklahoma City earlier this morning, promoting the Celtic Throne show, the second show, coming up this Sunday afternoon. And then after that, if we have some time, we'll take you through some viewer feedback, those that were able to watch Celtic Throne 2 this past Sunday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
From the mysterious chronicles of ancient Ireland comes the epic story of a faithful sage and a young princess. Their kingdom in ruins, they journey to the Emerald Isle, where they plant their traditions and culture as forces resist their revolution. They fight for the heart and soul of Ireland. Experience the innovative choreography, captivating athleticism and cinematic music of this trailblazing new Irish dance show, Celtic Throne 2, Psalter of Ireland, January 12th and 19th at Armstrong Auditorium. Or watch online at CelticThrone.com. Join the revolution.
This morning, we're going behind the scenes of an Irish dancing show that's happening right now in the Metro.
Alexis Young joins us live with a look at Celtic Throne 2, Psalter of Ireland. Alexis.
You know, this show is amazing. I don't know if you've seen the reviews yet, but they are thriving. Now, right here, I'm with Vienna and Jude. Now, get this. They're siblings. They've been traveling together, performing together. But for those who don't know about Celtic Throne, there's something actually special about this because it started here, choreographed here. We're actually at the Armstrong Auditorium where it all began. Now, Jude, you are the lead, so we're going to start with you. Since you guys have both been back, you know, the tour is back here right now. The next show is on Sunday. What has been your favorite thing about coming back to OKC and performing for a OKC Metro audience here in Edmond?
One of my favorite things is that the crowd just loves it. So we had our first we had our show opener on Sunday for CT2 because we've been doing the first show for years before that, and this was the first time we've done our second show, and people were cheering almost like it was a sporting event. Like, they were getting in. The second show is a lot more story-driven. It tells the story of Olaf Fulla, who was an Irish sage and legislator who preserved the royal dynasty of Jerusalem in Ireland. So he's fighting to keep the royal dynasty alive, and there's a big fight scene at the end, and people just get really into it. It's like, it's almost like you're at the fourth quarter of a basketball game. And that's really one of my favorite things about doing the show.
I have to ask because, you know, it sounds like a lot of action is going on. We mentioned drama earlier during the tease. Are the fans just screaming and yelling? Like, is it just a lot of action also in the audience?
Well, yeah, it's funny because before going on stage, we were like, I don't know what to expect. But yeah, we have
a long like opener. It's like 9 minutes long, but there's different scenes. And so after the first scene, it opens with Jerusalem burning, and there's all this action and soldiers, and you know, it just it's action packed. And we finished that that section of the number, and just the audience went wild, and we were like, okay, this is going to be good. So it's just it's really awesome to be a part of something like that. And again, it is the first show. We learned a whole lot. We love that show so much, but just being able to do a brand new one with new music, with new choreography, and just to give the audience something new is just super, super cool for all of us. So.
And we have to talk about this dancing, because I don't know if you guys are seeing this B-roll right now where we're showing the video of just how amazing the dancing is, but I mean, you can feel the emotion. Now, I have to ask is my next question. So you guys have over 100 performers, 30 dancers, but get this, some of the performers are as young as 5. How do you all tour? Because you guys have been on tour for like 5 years doing national tours. How do you manage that?
Well, with young children, you just have to be really caring, you have to be really loving, you have to be really clear and direct, but we just treat all of the kids like family. There's a lot of families in the show. I mean, we're siblings, so that's one of the families. But yeah, you just have to give your best. You have to encourage them to give their best. You got to be positive. You have to be encouraging, and they respond to that. And we have some of the most professional child performers that you'll see. They're just really good at what they do.
I love that. Vienna and Jude, come this Sunday right here at Armstrong Auditorium. It's starting at 2 p.m. You can either get tickets here or go to CelticThrone.com for tickets. But let me tell you this, it's a show. Go and purchase those tickets today.
There you go. Thanks to Channel 9 here locally for running that segment earlier today. I believe there might be another one in case you're here locally and you get those channels over the air or on cable. I think there's another one on the 4 p.m. Show this afternoon, so you can be looking for that. And you probably, if you're not in this area, you can probably go to CBS Channel 9, Google that for Oklahoma City, and you might be able to find some of these segments as they play locally here on the news. CelticThrone.com if you are interested in an exciting family-oriented show that, as you heard there, tells quite the story as well. Some feedback from Sunday's performance. Great show with wonderful talent. This Celtic Throne 2 was fantastic. The set, the dancers, the singers, the music, and the musicians were superb. It's unbelievable talent in this show, but I witnessed it. Bravo to all on the stage and behind the stage. You are wonderful. Another one says, been to all of the Celtic performances, and this one was the very best. It was fantastic. Armstrong Auditorium is wildly impressive on several levels. The building is staggering. The service is elite. And the sound quality inside the auditorium is world class. Don't miss a chance to catch a performance here. Another one here says, we recently were in Ireland and went to a Celtic dance show that was so good, but last night's performance at the Armstrong Auditorium was even better. Plus, it was only 5 minutes from my home, just down the road. How can you get, and this? And we're in North Edmond, it's not entirely rural, but it's just mostly residential areas out here. And then you see this magnificent building, which is in the shot behind me. How does this appear in central Oklahoma? And how do these productions come together? Well, if you'd like to see a bit more about it, make sure you go to CelticThrone.com and get tickets for this Sunday's performance at Armstrong Auditorium. It's 2 p.m. in the afternoon. Another one says, it is an absolute delight every time that my family is able to attend a performance at Armstrong. From the beautiful and cleanliness, the beauty and the cleanliness of the venue, to the warmth and friendliness of the people, to the talent of the performers, especially those in Celtic Throne, and even the acoustics in the building itself. It says, it is evident that everyone involved brings their very best to every aspect, and this brings the experience up to the level that simply can't be found anywhere else. As I say, CelticThrone.com, that's the website for the day. That's all we have time for on today's show. The fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You are listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Thanks for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.